Hello and welcome to the Human Innovation Podcast, the podcast for innovative leaders. I'm your host, Jens Heitland, and today my guest is Ken Stearns. Ken is grandfather, father, Midwestern boy, writer, speaker, photographer, and lyricist. He is an insurance executive that quit to pursue his dreams of traveling the country, meeting people, and hearing their stories. He hosts The Jar Life, a unique podcast that focuses on real people and real conversations. His American upbringing, living in 5 countries, working in 20 over the last 20 years, gives him a wide-ranging view on life, people, travel, business, food, and culture. In our conversation, we dive into the story of The Jar, how he got to record podcasts with strangers like Tom the Flower Man. We talk about his book, Dear God, and explore how all of this will enable change in leadership in this world. Please welcome to the show, Ken Stearns. Hello, Ken. Welcome to the show. Great to have you. How's it going?
Thanks for having me.
It's fascinating. I was digging into your story and I was listening to, I scrolled through 20 podcast episodes of yours.
Whoa. It's
fascinating to listen to the stories from Americans.
And oh, that's great.
People out there. It's super cool. Real people have real conversations.
Yes.
Ken, tell us about the story of The Jar. How did you get in deciding that you do something with a jar?
This is a question that is difficult for me to answer. It's a memory hole for some reason, Jens. And it came out of, what I can say is it came out of a lot of intentional things. And those intentional things that I was doing in life, they came together naturally. And they were not connected in the beginning, but somehow, you know, the evolution, that creative iterative process. And then I think sometimes it just becomes obvious, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You go through these doors and these curtains and you keep going and you're not sure what's behind the next one. And all of a sudden you look and you go, oh, I should. Just this should happen. Like it should be like this, a backwards fast forward. I was a corporate guy in Asia for about 20 years and a career before that in insurance. And so I was doing insurance guy stuff in Asia. I had an opportunity to live in 5 countries and work in more than 20 over a course of 20 years there. And towards the end of it, I decided I really wanted to work on my third act in life. What was that third act going to be? What did I want to be when I was 70? Try to imagine that imagineering process. And I love this where it's like, what do I want to do? What are my life skills? And so along that way, I started writing a book to become a public speaker. I thought public speaking was something I was good at. I enjoyed it at work. I had a reasonable amount of practice. So I thought I could do it. And so I started writing this book. And then I got the next crazy job and the book got sidelined. And I had also picked up this unfortunate working title, Dear God. And I thought, that's going to kill any kind of corporate speaking career because it's got the God word in it. And even though it wasn't religious, for whatever reason, it just made me pause. And like I said, then I got back into a crazy corporate job and I was back on that saddle and the book got pushed into a drawer, forgotten about. And I got out of that crazy job into another crazy job. And about 4 years later, I was sitting in this new job in Thailand. And I knew this was an easy job. And my brain was going to have an opportunity not to pour things into strategies, not to pour my brain power into human relationships at work. So I bought a guitar for myself. And the commitment I made to myself was, I'm going to do this for 2 years, no matter how bad it hurts. I'm going to buy a good guitar. I'm going to treat myself. But to do that, I got to get lessons for 2 years.
You have never played before.
This was my third crack.
Yeah. Okay.
I failed twice. I failed in fifth, sixth grade, and then I failed when I was about 30. Yeah. Both times, gave the guitar away, gave up. And I thought, man, this time, at least 2 years, and I'll make that commitment. And that turned out to be a really important thing in my life because that intentional act that was momentous, pushing me forward in a direction, ended up, I met a person. And that person said, we should write a song. And the song came from some of the notes that I had written on the Dear God book. I guess he prompted me and prompted me like every week. Let's write a song. We should write a song. We should write a song. And finally, I was like, I have some words. I have no idea how to write a song.
Yeah.
But I could steal some words from my notes. And so we sat down with a highlighter. on a Sunday afternoon and scratched out some verses and a chorus. And over a couple of weekends, I wrote my first song. And it was like, wow, that is cool. I was addicted. So I had more notes to go through and I wrote a couple more songs. But I was out of notes now because the book was just scratch paper. And so this forced me, weirdly, buying a guitar, making this commitment. The universe just got behind me. I met this gentleman who asked me that question. I ran out of words and I started writing the book to satisfy my songwriting urge, oddly. And before I knew it, I was really in love with the construct of the book. I thought was powerful. And I thought there was more to it than just writing a book for myself. It was really a culmination of a lot of thinking about the life. And so the idea of the book is it's letters to God asking, checking in. Do I have this right? Isn't this what this is all about? Don't I have it figured out, God? I think I got this stuff. I got this world nailed down. And it was, so there's four parts to it. The first one is self. And this is all about your yesterdays, your todays, and your tomorrows. I call it the battlefield of your mind.
Yeah, love that.
Everything happens in between those two ears.
Yeah, I tell you. Especially in the beginning or in corporate and innovation and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, what the boss thinks about you. Did I do this right? There's a lot of second guessing and thinking about the future. But really, it's a great conversation about self.
Yeah.
And then the next part to me was my interactions with other people directly. The relationships that I'd built one-on-one with people. And I really, for whatever reason, the words that came to me were acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion. And when I thought, man, if I could display those things in my interpersonal relationships, that would probably go a long way. And there's a lot of talk around acceptance now. And for me, acceptance became it's not approval, but that's different, right? Approval is different from, I don't have to approve of what everybody else does or thinks or says, but I can accept how they get there. I can accept your viewpoint. I can accept your, even if it's a terrible viewpoint, I can understand how you may get to that place. And I can appreciate that. It's not mine, but I can accept you as a person and I can be okay with you.
Yeah.
And then forgiveness is obviously, it takes age to get to a place where you got to realize forgiveness. It's not about forgiving the other person.
Yeah, right? It's about forgiving yourself.
And forgiving yourself for sure. And then also forgiving the other person to let go of that and not to hold on to it, let it own you.
Yeah.
And so it's a great chapter. And then compassion has obviously got some really struggling living in different countries where, you know, even like India, a place where compassion on the streets is not always seen. But yet you're driving around seeing things where your compassionate soul, the heartstrings are just being played. And so what does compassion mean? And so these are questions I'm asking God. And then the next one was more of a humanity approach. And I call that love, karma, and service are the topics we go through there. And it's really about humanity. And I think if we've got love for fellow man, if we've got karma, and I'm sure in Europe, it's the same. I'm sure you have the same old grandma language that we have, which is leave things better than you found it and treat people like you want to be treated.
Yes.
The fundamentals of karma for me, obviously it's different things to different people, but as a general rule for humanity, I looked at it like that. And then finally is service. It started as charity, but it was obviously became service because it's service to mankind, right? Service to other people. Can you get to a place? Isn't that part of what life is and about being a human is being in service to other people, not just yourself. And the last one is the book of you. I was calling it kind of the book of you, which is God or creator. Yeah. Or wherever you're at, whatever language you use, and wherever you're at on that spiritual spectrum. And so that was faith, hope, and prayer, meditation, mindfulness on the prayer part. So it's different words for everybody. But for me, I was going to be pretty blunt and direct because I was talking to God. So I couldn't sugarcoat it. I had to get straight to it.
Yeah.
And so it's really asking God, what are those things? And so it's me writing these letters to test my theories. And to let other people read my ideas and reflect on them. And that writing that thing was really interesting because slowly as it came together, this idea of what do I want to be when I grow up and how do I get back to America?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? How can I be relevant? And I had this idea to travel when I retired, take a year off and just come, or even maybe not retire, but just come back and do something else and travel the US. And boy, man, I don't know where these ideas came from at the end. And it's now back to the question, how did it, no idea, but it comes from doing these intentional acts. And all of a sudden, the idea to bring the letters from the book and to put each letter up on the computer and to find 8 questions from each letter. So it's 48 letters, it's 4 letters per topic. And so to go in there and say, okay, you know, what is love? And to write out, end up with 16 questions around love. To do this with every topic. And it was, or not 16, but 32 questions for every topic. And it was, man, it was painful. Because I'd already written, you write the book, you edit the book, you re-edit the book. Somebody edits it, they send it back. You got to look at the, by the time you finish the book, you're like, I don't want to see that book ever. And so I got to sit down for a few weeks and create 444 questions that I was going to print out, put in the jar, and travel the country and allow people to pull a question, allow the guests to sit down and pull a question out of the jar and have a conversation around it and pull another question. We usually get about 20 questions per episode. And so it's a good taste. They get a good percentage of the questions. And I think, like you said earlier, fascinating. I think it would be for Europeans because I'm not interviewing people in New York City. You know, it's not the West Coast, East Coast, right? It's the smallest towns, medium-sized towns, some big towns. I interviewed 8 amazing people in New York City, 8 amazing stories. But I'm also getting such a cut across the country, 111 cities. And so I've got about halfway through, and I've taken a break here in Atlanta. I restart on Monday. On Monday morning, I start back the tour. I got another 50 cities, another 200 people to see where it goes. And so I'm super lucky. I've got a great halfway point, and it's a great time to reflect and to see, am I in the right direction? And am I doing the right thing still?
I think you are. So what I have seen as well, the engagement of the people on your journey, it's so fascinating. I mean, one part is just seeing the videos on YouTube where people are drawing the question that was like, some people are now, don't want to know it, just shoot.
Yeah, yes. You saw some of this.
Yeah. Just tell them to me.
Just read it to me, yeah.
And then some people are drawing them, reading, and it's like the brain starts to tick, tick, tick,
you
tick.
See, oh, right?
How do I interpret that it sounds smart? Which is not at all what it is about, it's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. You also get to see, I think even for like yourself, when you hear the question, there's an interpretation first.
Yeah.
Which I'm really weird, Jens. I imagined and envisioned so accurately. It's weird to me. Like, no surprises on the show. But the biggest surprise at the same time was I knew people would answer based on their life experience, but I forgot that they would interpret it on their life experience.
Yeah.
So when people started reading the question and saying, this is what it means to me, I was like, no, it doesn't. Because I wrote the book. I wrote the question. It means this. And obviously, of course, you just sit back and go, wow. Okay. So it was my biggest surprise was missing that part of it because I was so dialed into where the question came from.
Yeah. How did it start? How did you find your first person for the first interview?
Yeah. We'll talk the two cities, the first two cities, because they're polar opposites. The first one, so I ended up picking a city. My daughter lives in Portland. So I figured I would start. I had this hallway in Vietnam when I was living in Vietnam for the last 2 years. And that's where I did most of my planning and a lot of the finishing work. And I had 6 whiteboards drilled into the wall down the hallway.
Yeah.
Had the maintenance guy come up and drill these into the wall. And on the opposite side, I had this map of the United States, big plastic map. And I had a dry eraser. And I would just play in the mornings with standing there with a cup of coffee and my towel. And I would just draw squiggly lines where I was going to go.
Yeah.
And I erase it and come back the next day and draw another one. And then I realized I want to follow the sun and start in April, and here's how we'll go. So I went across the upper United States and then down the East Coast, and I'll go across to the West now. So I picked Washington, Olympia, Washington. I picked 2 cities I go in every state is the capital, or one. I mean, 1 city in every state. And then I picked something in the middle along the way. And a lot of it is very random. Just looking at a map and just zooming in and go, oh, that sounds like a cool town.
And these are all cities you have never been, or the big ones maybe.
Most of the stuff I've never been.
Yeah.
Never been.
Yeah.
And so the first one was great. I got back in touch with an old college friend who I hadn't seen in 35 years. he was my anchor person in Olympia. And so it was really great. I got to interview a friend, a person I really didn't know, honestly.
Yeah,
I knew him
yeah.
from college.
Yeah, it's a time ago.
A long time ago. And so I actually stayed in his house, got to meet him and know him again. And he was great. And the first guest that he turned me on to, so he was the second guest, but the first guest turned out to be his pastor. Hmm. And Pastor Carl's episode one, he's a friend. He started, it's atheist, became a pastor. He was raised an atheist and found his way. And his spiritual journey is really cool. And we just hit it off. And it was an amazing, for me, like proof of concept. I left there. I was flying because everything worked out like I thought it did. I didn't screw it up. I got the recording. The questions went good. And his answers were like butter because he's a theologian, right?
Yeah, they know how to talk.
Oh, man. And these spiritual questions, right, Jens?
I mean, yeah. My father was a pastor too.
Okay, then yeah.
I know how that works.
Yeah, he lays a base down. He frames it and he starts to build. It's just, man, it was beautiful. And then I had Tom and a couple more. And we get most of our guests now through a little Facebook post, letting people know we're coming, be a guest. I use LinkedIn. If I have some time, I'll curate some guests in advance. And then the other one is the second city I went to. So I made a little tactical error. I made a mistake on my second city. I picked this small ass town, but it was big. It was part of a dam. And I wanted to get up to this big dam in the after the World War, between the Korean War and stuff, the U.S. had this Army Corps of Engineers. And there was a bunch of bored engineers that went around and built crazy stuff. They built dams. They did a lot of dams. And then they made parks and lakes and stuff. And so I thought, oh, I want to go to the Cooley Dam, built 1940-something, one of the first big projects. And I picked this wrong place called, I picked not Cooley Dam City, I picked Cooley City somehow. I picked the wrong one. And so I rock up into this town, and there's not a stoplight. There's not even a stop sign on the road.
I think you have had no podcast interview set up.
I had my first four all set up, and this town, for whatever reason, Facebook, no one was replying because there's nobody there. So I rock up into the city. I do a U-turn in the middle of the road because there's nobody there. And there's this bar called Cooligan. So I cruise into Cooligan's after doing a U-turn, driving by real slow, and I park right in front and I slide in, and it looks like this American Western bar. Real long wooden bar, the liquor behind it, some server, a pool table in the back, karaoke, dance hall in the front. And there's this Harley Davidson looking guy with a big beard about halfway down the bar sitting there. And I'm like, okay, I want to sit at the bar, but I don't want to get too close, but I don't want to be unfriendly. So I'll sit two stools away. And sure enough, I sit down and the guy looks over at me after a half second. Looks over, and it's 2 p.m. We're drinking. Yeah. He looks over at me and goes, "What's in the jar?" And I was taken back, right? A little bit like, oh, that was aggressive.
And you had your job with you inside of the bar.
I didn't know what he was talking. How did he like, it's like, well, he goes, and he nudges out the window. Look, he looks like this out the window. He goes, "I saw you drive by."
So he has seen your van.
He saw the van.
Yeah.
And then he saw me park in front. And then I looked out the window and you could see the van and I got a big logo on the hood.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, okay. So we started talking. And before I knew it, he told me his whole story. Complete stranger in the afternoon and somebody in the bar told me his whole story. The next night I was at his house and he was on the show.
Awesome.
And his wife sat there the whole time and really great couple. And as soon as we finished, she jumped up out of her chair. "You got to get me on the show tomorrow." And I was just like, what is happening? Oh, this is cool. And so I was back the next night. They cooked dinner together. We had a couple of beers. We talked. I interviewed his wife. Just an amazing. So I pick up people in bars is how I get some of the, some of the guests.
So right now it's, you already know which cities you want to go from a planning perspective, using Facebook to get a couple of people. And if not, then you will find someone.
Exactly. Yeah. There's on our website, we've got, I use a software called Road Trippers. And so the whole map is filled up with where I'm going to be and not the dates yet, but it's laid out.
Yeah.
It's laid out. Usually about 6-8 weeks in advance, I've got the dates laid out.
Yeah. So people can have a look at it.
And they can have a look and see. Yeah. And we're using it now as part of the booking for people to book.
Yeah.
It helps them see where they're at and then they can get into the calendar.
It's so cool. I would love to do that in Europe.
Absolutely, you could do it. Hey, I'll franchise it for free. Absolutely.
I just love the idea. Is just taking the jar and people are drawing their questions, and it's nothing staged. They haven't seen the questions before. Maybe, of course, they have listened to other interviews already.
Yes.
But it's not professional podcast guests, which you would think of in other podcasts. Like if me interviewing you, you know how to do a podcast. That's easy because you have done a couple of.
Yes.
They have never done anything. That's for most of them, I guess it's their first interview ever that someone is asking them something.
Absolutely. And so, yes. And then the second part, there's two more parts of this. The second one is somebody's listening to them.
True.
Truly listening for 1 hour and something. Now, you know, as a guest and anybody listening to the show, imagine you actually somebody listening to you for an hour, really uninterrupted, with not coming up with any. Not, if you're interrupted, it's more to find out more about what you said, not about interjecting my truth.
Exactly, not your opinion.
Yes, although I do some of that. I mean, I do at times.
But it's mainly to keep the conversation flowing.
Exactly, and it is about the guest.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you've seen that you've articulated to before is watching that answer formulate. Huh. There's nothing in the jar that you haven't thought about. It's all stuff we think about, struggle with daily, we might talk to people about it a bit, but when you have to crystallize an opinion or an experience and the gears are turned, and when it comes out of people's mouth, even their own wonderment at what they said is so amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's like such a special place for me to be, helping people and watching them articulate their own truths.
Yeah. What I love when I listen to some of them, how deep they go into their own story.
Yet,
and how open they are talking about, as well, very difficult things. It's fascinating.
I just interviewed this morning I have a mental health podcast I started as a counter to this.
Yeah.
And this morning I had on Jessica Hassley. She was one of my guests. And I don't know people's stories beforehand, right? And she was sharing how she lost twins at 26 weeks and had to deliver them after she knew that they had already passed. And she shares a story, and it's just like, I mean, people have got such strength.
Yeah.
We don't give them credit for that they can get through this stuff. And like you said, so open. And people want to share their story. They want people to hear. It's powerful. It's really powerful. And I so much appreciate that about the guests.
Yeah. I think there's a lot one can learn from that as well. Thinking about an international perspective. So me sitting here in Europe, being in the European, Western European bubble, everyone has opinion in these days. The whole world is split apart in the moment. And we discussed about that as well in the pre-chat a couple of weeks ago. Just seeing normal people from different parts of the world, which you don't see in the news because the news are just showing, hey, there's a bomb, there's this, that's bad.
Yes.
It's politics. It's not normal people. And I mean, you have lived in different countries. I have lived in different countries. One of the examples, I lived in Russia and I've met people. I have good friends in Russia.
Yes.
And now we're in this situation where the world is bonkers. And we don't see the normal people behind things. We just see the politics. And that's what I love about the people on your podcast, including yourself, obviously. It's normal people. They have a normal life and difficult situations like everyone is facing in certain times of their life as well. So it's so much relatable. And that shows how close we are together, though that we are far away from each other.
And the part I've been really happy about is there's no politics in the show.
Yeah.
Never comes in.
Yeah.
It's not part of it. I mean, there might be couple people allude to it, and I've had a couple that are a little spicy, but they're spicy in the whole thing, right? The whole thing's spicy.
Yeah.
So you can listen to it. And again, even my daughter, she's like my good litmus test for what's okay and not okay.
What is acceptable.
Yeah. When we like, dad, you can't say this. She'll keep me out of trouble and keep me in line. And I thought some of the people I've had on, because if you follow some of those, I've had some really religious people on, people of faith. And it comes out in the questions. Like you said, the design and my hope of the show, the way that it was constructed, I'm so happy to hear you say it because it makes me feel pretty good, is that their story comes out. And that's what I want. I want people to be able to tell their story. But I'm not a good interviewer, and people typically aren't good storytellers. It's a craft. And that's their first time being, right?
As I said, you are a fantastic interview because, well, at least for me, like I said as well before we recorded, you bring so much from your executive life into this, mm-hmm. which is not visible in the way how you do it. But the questions you ask, they are more like leadership coaching questions, which get the other person talking, open up in ways, which I guess you couldn't do that if you would not have the executive experience and leadership.
Yeah, I think for sure. It's almost like I don't even notice it, right? For sure, I don't notice it. It's become my style. And I think, I didn't maybe give myself enough credit on the interview side, but allowing people to tell their story and then through the book and through the questions is like, I'm still sometimes just going, man, it works. This is cool. And people do get to tell their story, and we don't have to be contrite or making sure we get it in.
Yeah.
It just comes, they read a question and it just comes pouring out like you saw so many times.
Yeah. How do you document the totality? I've seen YouTube videos where you link the different stories together when you go into one town.
Oh yeah, the one city. Yeah.
You drive with your van and then you film yourself in the van and then have the different interviews. Do you document that more?
We stopped that. It was pricey. I mean, to put that together was honestly cheap. And I wish I could have kept it going because that could be almost a show in itself. Honestly.
I was about to say.
It was really put together as a pitch for Netflix.
Yeah.
That's a Netflix show, the way that's put together. And the gentleman that did that is a smart guy, really creative. But I just had to keep the team thinner and thinner the farther I got away from my last paycheck. And this is all me.
I get that,
And so I got to make sure I finish the project, make sure I keep going. But that's a good documentation. So I take a film of everything. So I have at least one camera running. So I have an enormous library of the conversations and everything. And so that part's good. I know I've got it stuff. All the gems are there. And there's so much good stuff in the library.
Shout out. If there's anyone out there who wants to dive deeper into that and support Ken, reach out to him or to me. I'm happy to connect you guys.
That'd be awesome. I'm working now.
I honestly think this, just the documentation as well, your journey on how do you meet, if we take the example with the colleague in the bar, how do you meet this guy? Imagine this would be all documented. That's almost like you say, it's a Netflix series where people are just interested in how do you hit up different people on your road. How did you meet people? What's their story and how does that work? Because that's real life. It's not set up in the other things, which is all trimmed and everything is politically correct. This is just normal life.
Oh, it's real. It's real life. I had another fun one like this, very similar. I was in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, it's just middle of the country, right?
Yeah, I've never heard.
It's near Chicago. It's dead center in the country. And it's basically cornfields, Jens, as far as you can see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just cornfields outside the main city. And I was staying at this place and I was walking to this restaurant to go get some lunch. And it's a bar, pub kind of a place. And I've got kind of a walk funny pace and I'm walking. I look over to this other guy about my age. It looks a little like me. Mm. And he's kind of walking. And we're going to meet. And we're going to meet at the front door. And it's obvious that we're going to actually collide, right? Our paths are crossing. And I've learned along the way that, you know, almost there are no accidents. There's no coincidences, especially when you're doing what I'm doing, which is completely open to the universe and just I'm out there. There's nothing, like you said, prescribed or scripted. I haven't closed those doors.
Yeah.
It's open, right? It's not a prescribed. So I'm open. So I have to remain open. And so anyway, sure enough, we get there and we both want to hold the door for each other. And we're kind of laughing, right? And we could like, and it's this awkward man. It's like a bromance already at the front door, right? Yeah. And it was like so awkward. It was like, okay, we both went into the bar and then he went to go sit down at somewhere. And I was like awkwardly trying to find a place not near him because that's just too weird. I'm still resisting the force at this point. And sure, I can't, there's no space. There's only one spot in the bar left.
Next to him.
And okay, I go over and I'm like, well, I guess we're meant to meet each other. And so we start talking a little bit and I share with him my business card. I have these unique business cards that has a question on one side from the jar.
Love that. That's
and cool. My contacts on the other side. So I sit with people and I say, how about a question of the day? And I'll fan out about 10 business cards and pick one. And then that's their question of the day. And we talk and then I introduce myself. I met Tom Bozeman. Tom was the flower king of Iowa, and he's got a story. And the next day I was at his house hearing his story. Fantastic story, amazing person, great heart. But, you know, there it was. Just, I was supposed to meet him, supposed to hear his story for whatever reason. Maybe I don't know yet the final reason, but it's interesting. So I met Tom. So another guest like that. And there's several stories like this.
Yeah, that's super cool. What did you learn about people in general? So you have been living in Asia for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Going back into your home country, which I did a couple of years back as well, and it was very difficult for me. How was that for you?
I've been watching expats come and go, Jens, right? And I've seen it, right? I know that's trouble, right? Getting back is not easy. The integration. And even my daughter went back and had a struggle. I mean, honestly, she really struggled, went back, and it was hard for her. There's no manual. There's no help. There's no guide. Nobody gives a fook. You're just on your own. So I thought this is also a really good therapeutic way for me to get back and meet Americans and reintegrate back into my own country. Because I'm just a bit of a foreigner, honestly.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I hadn't, you know, politically, I didn't know that. I had no idea on the pulse of America. I knew what CNN told me, but I didn't know what was really going on. So it was really good to use that to meet people and to find out at the end, we're all human.
Yeah.
We have a lot. We have way more in common than what social media and the news would like you to think.
Yes.
I came up with this idea of the bell curve or analogy back to the bell curve, right? Which is most of us, we're in the middle on all of the human, especially everything in the jar and human stuff and real life things, family, self, love, worried about the future, think about the past, all these things, we're right smashed up against the middle. And you could be a little bit green or you could be blue, but you're going to be darn, you know how much crossover stuff there is too? On this one, on this topic, you're here, but on that topic, you're here.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you take that median and you fatten it out a little bit, we're all the same. Now, somehow we've let the fringe elements on the sides with the clown horns and the cars and the microphones and the spotlights, the clown shows on both sides of any issue are all the ones that seem to somehow get the attention. And that's what we're supposed to believe is real life and real people. But, you know, I think we can remind the audience that no, you have a lot more in common with the person in front of you in the car than you think, the person next to you on the train. We're all human. The part that surprised me or the takeaway was the strength of humanity is really the human spirit is unbreakable.
Yeah.
I mean, we crack. We bend, sometimes smushed, but somehow it regains its shape. And you know, I think for anybody listening, you're going through tough times, man, keep going. You know, it will end, right? And there's light at the end of the tunnel. You just got to keep moving. The spirit is strong, man. I'm blown away by what people can go through in life and still wake up the next day.
True. What can we learn from this? As if you would go back, if we just take an idea, you would go back to corporate. As a leader, what would you take out of your experience now with meeting all these different people into a leadership role?
God, I'd be way more human.
Tell me more.
I would be so much more of a human. My leadership style before, pretty open and very supportive. Coaching, like I think you picked it up in my questions.
Yeah.
My leadership style is very supportive, very coaching-based. The idea is to build people, support people. And my belief is almost everybody I come in contact, if you're in a role, you probably can do that role. And you probably can excel at it at some point, given coaching and time and support. But I was also a salesperson and I was also a sales executive, ultimately, at a high performing organizations where accountability was a real thing. And sometimes we measured daily metrics. I've been in places where you get hourly metrics. We look at phone call, like you manage, when you start reviewing call centers, you're looking at hourly. I think sometimes getting caught up in that pursuit of achieving goals and targets and goal setting. I love to set crazy goals for companies and for teams, individuals. I would be softer in a way, more supportive, more in touch. I think I can say it best like this. I now know that I don't know what people are going through every day. despite the face that I'm talking to in a meeting, no matter how, what smile they put on or the attention face or the they look like they're listening to me, I don't know what's going on in their head and what they're dealing with. And I would give a lot more grace as a leader.
And is that because we are not that open in a workplace where we talk about these things? Or is it, what is the reason for that?
Yeah, we're not vulnerable at work, for sure. So I think it's culturally, I don't think in corporate life you're allowed, right? I don't think it's a permission that's given.
Why not?
Yeah, it's a great weakness, because it would show weakness. The higher you go up, that you talk to some of these New York traders, right? They're savages. As soon as somebody shows weakness, right, they're going to kill. They're going to destroy Sharks. That person's weakness to kill them so they can climb on top of their head and push them under the water.
Yeah.
So I think there is that perception. That's what it is. One is perception. Two, it's stigma. You don't want to be that person with this, and you may not escape that if somebody labels you.
Yeah.
I had this idea to use the jar in a corporate setting. You and I are got a lot of very similar backgrounds, and we've been to so many team buildings. You think of all the team buildings you've been to, and at the end of the team building, everybody goes away. And what skills did you pick anything up? What did you pick? What can you use in the last go around the room? What did you learn, Jens, this week that you can, the one thing you're going to go back and implement tomorrow in your business? And those are like team building, trying to get to become friendly with somebody. But the team building is really, it's never the vulnerability, and I never get to know the person. So what if we had a jar? What if it was you and 50 of your teammates, and we put two of us in a table in the middle with two chairs with a jar, and you picked a question and I read it to you and you shared your answer. And then I picked a question, you read it to me and I shared my viewpoint and all these human topics. And I suddenly got to know Jens the human. Like you said, the storytelling comes out, the life comes out to the questions. And if I had that view of who you were as a human, I would think I would not have to interpret what you meant when you said something in a meeting, when you wrote an email that I got snarky about, or you didn't approve something because you're the CFO, and I know it's because my boss doesn't like you, or I'm going to put some reason behind that. And then I know you as a person. And I think I got some compassion for you now. I understand how you think about your past, what happened. Maybe even you might even share part of what your past was. And I'd be like, whoa. I think that skill set of being able to have some grace for people, some compassion for people, and appreciation that we don't know what people are going through. And maybe those are conversations as leaders we can have one-on-one and be open to being approached.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking while you said that, how do we get us closer to that? I know it's very difficult because organizations are set in this way. Like you said, you have been in sales, which means you are measured from A to Z. Yes. And that's highly likely not going to change quickly because that's how the business is measured. So I was just thinking, what if we would change the measurement of success?
We have an old, there's a couple of these insurance adages, one of these training programs. But this one is a steal over from other corporate stuff. But it's what gets measured gets done.
Yeah, especially in Germany.
Hey, man, that's what you can count on. And it's a great culture to a point, right? To a point. As long as I guess what your point is, as long as the ruler that you're using is the right one.
Yeah, exactly.
And could you change that ruler? What if the KPIs are more human focused?
Yeah.
Different indexes, you know, how people in the company, what, you know, it's culture in a way, right? It could be part of the culture.
Yeah, but culture is not really measured today. It's just something that happens. I always say culture is the thing when the boss is outside of the room, what is happening inside of the room when the boss is not there.
That's a genius definition.
Yeah, I've stolen it from someone else, but I don't know exactly from whom, but it's so true. That is real culture. It's like what the stuff that's happening when the boss leaves the room. If everyone is chatting about the boss, then you know what's going on. If everyone is just themselves.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that means, right? The impact, because when you hear it, it's powerful. And then you start to think about it and you're right. If it's negative, if it's people infighting or if, and it means when you may say mean to leave the room, it's really not being in that space. and what happens at the ground level? What are people talking about at the cubicles?
Yeah,
and you know,
exactly.
And what is the tone of the emails going back and forth, and these communications? And that's the culture. You're absolutely right. It's set by the boss, honestly.
Yeah, there's a huge leadership part of that. And just taking, looping us back to your story and what you experience with the people you interview, what we see right now in this world is the dividing part.
Yes.
But in the end, what we also see is, hey, we're the same. So if we are fundamentally are the same, why can't we be the same in the work environment? Why can we only do this at home when there comes a stranger with a jar?
Yeah, we get into our tribes at work.
Yeah.
I think we are tribal by nature. And I do think you get into these little tribes at work. And I think as soon as you go tribal, then there's the they and them and us and them kind of mentality.
We need to figure that out somehow.
It's a great point. It's something I'm going to ponder now. Yeah, it's good. Give me that thought of, and how can I impact that at work, right? How does that message, how do I craft that into a message with a CEO?
Exactly.
They'll feel it, right? If you get a CEO with that, they will absolutely resonate with them. Like, that's in the dark corner and I don't really want it. I don't think about it because I can't solve it.
That's the difficult stuff. Exactly. And you can't change that in one day.
No, absolutely not. I would argue though, still I'm that theory of, when we humanize each other and we got an appreciation for who we are, the road I've walked down, and I can see that and I can find some acceptance with other people. I think it is that through that acceptance, that understanding comes that kind of giving some grace, give people some grace. I wish I had that skill set when I was an executive, a wee bit more. I apologize to everybody that ever came in contact with me.
But that's also good. Because being open and say, hey, I learn, because we always learn it. Yes, I did mistakes yesterday, but I don't need to do them tomorrow again.
Yeah, I'm a different person than when I started. I had some inklings I would be different or I would be impacted or touched or something, but I didn't know I would be changed.
Yeah,
I'm truly changed. I'm on that road where I can accept that the next part of the journey, the second half, is going to have an impact on me.
I was about to say, you're only halfway through.
Yeah, I'm only halfway. And I'm just getting my head around it, that I am different and I'm open to change. I'm trying to become a better person out of this. And I think, and that part surprised me. And I'm still struggling with it in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea where you will end up?
I don't. I don't know where it's leading me. I've burnt my boats.
That's good.
I burnt my boats. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I have a roadmap. I'm driving somewhere.
Yeah.
And I was sharing this with a couple of people. Some people have asked me this question in different formats or different ways, guests and stuff. And I did have this Irish lady, this kind of older Irish lady, and said, oh, there's an Irish saying, the path will rise to meet you.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure
we have the same German saying.
I was going to say, there must be something in German.
Yeah. How is it said in German? It is basically the road shows the road. The path shows the road. It doesn't really work in a direct translation because it's a weird saying in German, but it means the same.
Yeah. The path will rise because the path will rise to, I'm on a road. I'm on a path of something, or actually I'm not. I feel like at times I've got a machete and I'm going through sometimes it feels like I got a machete and I'm going through the jungle, honestly. And sometimes it feels like I'm on a skateboard going down a pretty steep hill.
But that's what is, for me, that's also the exciting part. I mean, we know each other a couple of weeks and I just follow you in social media and it's like, oh my God, that's cool. That's cool. And discovering you and backtracking you because we didn't know each other.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's just fascinating to see the different stages where you have been in the past. And of course, I will follow you now going forward as well. Intrigued to see where this is going and happy to support in any way I can. On the road as well.
I love that, Jens. So and it's really appreciated. I'm to keep the journey going, to keep discovering stories and to see where it leads.
Yeah.
You know, see what can we do with this and what comes out of it. And I hope it's something way bigger than myself. It has been about giving real people a platform to share their story. And hopefully those stories resonate with other people and they can get strength from it, become better people, change. And it's great to hear that as you listen to it, what you get out of it, it's powerful for me.
Yeah, it's super good. Let's use that to get into the last part of the podcast where I ask a couple of questions that are connected or not connected to our conversation. Let's see.
Let's see.
First, I always call them rapid fire questions, but then people always says like, but they're not rapid fire. They're tough. So yeah, I've changed them a little bit, but let's see.
Have you ever faced a machine gun? It's also pretty tough.
So if you could work with a project that's impacting every human on Earth, what project would you choose to work with, and why would you choose to work with that project?
Work with a project that's affecting everybody on Earth.
Yeah.
It would be, I think right now it's going to be something mental health. And I've got to think about who have I seen globally. And I haven't seen that project yet. And I'm now in this space of mental health. And I want to find that who's really driving a conversation like I'm trying to do to get this kind of conversation. Because the jar is ultimately has really been a mental health journey. Now, yeah. If I look back on it, right, it's a lot about mental or just awareness in a way, mental awareness, mindfulness. I'd like to find that project. So I don't have the name in a way, but I know what I want to do now is to find who's in that space of mental health, who's trying to make changes. And I think at a big level, we can talk about certain things, awareness. There's a lot of things you can do at that global level, but for sure, the action is going to be very localized.
Yeah.
And I want to find somebody who gets that and is in that space. I'm looking for that partner, actually. I'm looking for my other evangelist right now in this space.
So if there's anyone out there, reach out to Ken.
Yeah, I'm looking for my fellow evangelist.
Next question. What advice would you give to a young innovator that's just getting started?
Momentum. A couple things. And I talk about momentum being just start, just do it. Just go.
Yeah.
Don't think too much because you might eliminate a possibility. You might miss an opportunity to learn by mistakes. Embrace mistakes, make a lot of mistakes because that's learning. And, you know, this to quote some genius guy I saw on LinkedIn, named Jens Heitland, he said, if you want to double your success,
you need to be mistakes. A failure, I guess.
Double your failure, right? Not mistakes, failure. Mistake. I think you're right. The right word is failure because you're trying. And mistake is making a mistake. But a failure is trying something and not achieving what you wanted to achieve. But the learning out of that is probably more powerful than what you would have achieved on that single thing.
Yeah.
And so I like to combine momentum, keep moving, keep going, don't stop, and be intentional. Don't be silly about it. Have a lot of intentions behind it and be willing to make mistakes. Failure. Be willing. Okay. It's okay to fail.
Love that. And it's quite interesting as well. Like you said already, we have a couple of things in common. You are on that journey. You are going from a corporate executive role into, I call it startup role right now.
Yeah, where you're really is a startup.
You are treating yourself like a startup. You are on the journey to figure out what it is. And that's a place to be. I think a lot of people out there can learn from people like you who are just having the balls and doing things.
Yeah. It's powerful moments. You know, when I quit, when I called up and had the words come out of my mouth, I was done. The flood of emotion, so powerful.
And so scary. Powerful.
I was terrified. I was half crying. I wouldn't cry. I was choked up.
Yeah.
My emotion was I just stuck right here. And just did this thing of being free. I called it I ended up writing a song called Free Man. And really the Free Man story is about being in corporate or being a kid and having anything possible in front of you. And you dream whatever you want to be. But as life is, you make sacrifices, you do things, and you end up somehow in your own prison of your own making. And how that journey, how that happens. But, you know, at the end, it's having the faith in yourself, to believe in yourself that you can, there is something else and you can find that way out. And me finding my way out, believing in myself.
Yeah.
And the kind of the turning point of the song is I bared my soul, not for everybody. I bared my soul just for me and looked in that mirror and having that real conversation with that person behind the facade, behind everything, into my soul and having that conversation with myself about what do you want to be and finding that courage to do it. knocking those walls down, finding your, and I found myself bit by bit.
Yeah.
So bit by bit, you go into that prison, the corporate jailhouse, but coming out of it, that reentry is, it's bit by bit. You know, it's a step-by-step process to come away and to have the courage to go do it.
Yeah. You have a fascinating story, Ken, and I'm really eager to see you succeeding wherever your journey will go. How can people reach out to you? Where can people find you?
Yeah, I think that the greatest landing spot, Jens, is the website.
Yeah.
www.thejar.live.
I will put that into the show notes so that people can follow you wherever you are.
Yeah.
Highly recommend everyone have a look at the YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, that's
I love the videos where, like, there was one moment where you spoke, I think, to the producer. See, I'm effing it up right now. It's so human as well, that part. So I really love that. It's not fake. It's just who you are.
So vulnerable on that show. It's so embarrassing.
But that's where I say, I would love to meet you in one of the bars and have a beer with you.
Same. Yeah.
And maybe one day we will make that happen.
It might happen. Just a note for listeners on the website, if you go and then, well, I think it asks for your email or something. If you follow those steps, you get the first three letters of the book.
Yeah.
So I've put it up as a PDF now. You go in there and you'll get a link and you can download part of the book for free.
That's cool. Awesome. Ken, thank you very much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you. Looking forward to see your journey evolving.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen, so much for the support. It's truly appreciated.